Wow, what a story. What a story. And for those of you who are with us for the first time, one of the things that we love to do here at Hoboken Grace is give you a chance to be able to hear the stories of the people who are sitting right beside you so that you realize when Anthony comes up here and he says, listen, we believe God is pursuing you, this isn't just a theory. This isn't just something that we hope is true. This is something that we are seeing over and over and over again in the lives of the people who are sitting right beside you today. And we believe that God wants for you to experience that in Him as well. And right now, we're in the midst of this conversation called When. And for those of you who haven't met me, my name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And we are looking at how we can begin to have the mindset of Christ, a mindset that is not defined by defeat, that is not defined by settling, but a mindset that is defined by victory. And last week, we began this conversation. We looked at this passage in Ephesians chapter 6, where it says, a final word, be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power. Put on all of God's armor so that you will be able to stand firm against all strategies of the devil. For we are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, and against evil spirits in heavenly places. He says, listen, I want for you to have this mindset, a final word, be strong in the power of the Lord. Be strong, this mentality of victory. We looked at this other passage last week, 1 Corinthians 9:24. Don't you realize that in a race, everyone runs to win, but only one person gets the prize. So run to win. Run to win. And as we walk into this conversation, for those of us who maybe have begun to accept defeat, or maybe you're here and you've just decided, listen, life is just, it is what it is, and you've begun to settle. God is calling us out of that. And we're looking at how God is stepping into our lives with the book of Ephesians and saying, okay, listen, it's time for you to start winning. Say win. In the book of Ephesus, he's writing, or book of Ephesians, he's writing to Ephesus, and he's saying, listen, you guys have allowed yourselves to begin to lose in all these different ways. It's time for you to start winning. And as we walk through this conversation, we're looking at, okay, how does he teach us to do that? And last week, we started with this truth that we don't win by defeating people. We don't win over people. We don't fight against people. And today, I want to spend a little bit more time there because I think there's more truth to what he's teaching us here in Ephesians 6 through 10 than just the fact that we don't fight against people. I think there's more to it than that. When I first started to read through Ephesians chapter 6, there was a mental image that I began to form. And all of us do this when we read through books. This is why if you've read the book before you've seen the movie, you don't like the movie. Because you have a picture of what this person is supposed to look like, and then that actor shows up on the screen, and you're like, this is all wrong. This is all wrong. You begin to form a mental image. And as I was reading through Ephesians chapter 6, I began to form a mental image. And as I've talked to other people, I've found that they form the same image that I form. Because when I read through Ephesians chapter 6, and it talks about standing firm, putting on all of God's armor, the picture that begins to form in my head is this soldier who's standing. And last week we talked about how we fight from the perspective of victory, that Christ has won the victory. We're not fighting from a perspective of defeat, but from a perspective or a place of victory. And so in my mind, I form this image of a soldier who's standing at the top of a hill and he's holding the hill. And it's this single soldier. And it's really, in my mind, this really beautiful thing. And his armor is like glistening in the sun, and it's just majestic and powerful, and there's this single soldier who's standing there, and he's going to hold the hill. The more time I've spent with Ephesians, the more time I've begun to realize, or the more I've begun to realize, that is a stupid image. There's no better way to say it than that. That is a stupid image. And I know some of you, for you, that's offensive because that's the image that's in your head. But you need to understand too, for you, that is a terrible image because this isn't a gladiator match. This is a war. Do you know what happens to single soldiers in war? They die. They die. They lose. It's over. It's finished. toast, whatever word you want to use, it's over for them. But for some reason in my mind, when I come to Ephesians 6, I have this single soldier who's going to hold the hill. But the more that I've read through Ephesians, the more time I spend with Ephesians 6, this isn't the picture that Ephesians is trying for us to understand or for us to see in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, a majority of Ephesians is about how we fight together. A majority of Ephesians is about unity. Let me take you back to Ephesians chapter 2. He says, so now you Gentiles, and there's this huge divide inside the church at Ephesus between the Gentiles and the Jews. He says, so now you Gentiles are no longer strangers and foreigners. You are citizens along with God, with all of God's holy people. You are members of God's family. Together we are his house, built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, and the cornerstone is Christ Jesus himself. We are carefully joined together in him, becoming a holy temple for the Lord. The whole book of Ephesians is calling them to unity, saying we're together, 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 together. Over and over again, he's calling us to this understanding that we do this together. But then for some reason, we come to Ephesians chapter 6, and I think for many of us, we begin to form in our mind this picture of a single soldier. It's not at all the picture that God wants for us to have. Because if you read Ephesians in its entirety, when you come to the end of it, the picture that should come to your mind is not a single soldier, but an army that's standing on the top of the hill, that's going to hold the hill, not one, but all together, working together, fighting together in order to be able to win the battle. As he comes to it and he says, you, he's not talking about a singular you. He's talking to all of them collectively, the church. He says, this is what I want for you to do together. You don't fight individually, you fight collectively. You don't win individually, you win collectively. And he's calling them to a different picture than what I think most of us have, but we come from an individualistic culture. And so I think we begin to form the wrong image. As I was working through this, I was thinking about what Peter tells us about the war that we're in and how Peter describes the war. In 1 Peter chapter 5, he says this. He says, stay alert, watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And he uses the same terminology that you see in Ephesians. He says, I want you to stand firm against him and be strong in your faith. Remember that your Christian brothers and sisters all over the world are going through the same kind of suffering you are. He says, we're in this together. He says, I want for you to stand firm. And then he introduces something to us to help us, a picture to us to help us understand the war. He says, here's how you should think about your enemy. Think about him like a lion. He says, I want for you to think about him like a lion. He says, the enemy that you have, we don't fight against people, but you have an enemy. He says, and your enemy is like a lion. He's prowling about seeking who he could devour, looking for somebody to devour. He says, this is kind of what this battle is like. Now, he doesn't say that so that we'll be afraid. Just like in Ephesians 6, when he says we fight against these things, not flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. In neither place are they telling us so that we'll be afraid. As a matter of fact, if you go back to Ephesians, remember, Ephesians 1 tells us that Christ has already defeated anything that would come against us. Let me remind you of that. It says, I also pray that you will be able to understand the incredible greatness of God's power for us who believe him. This is the same mighty power that raised Christ from the dead and seated him in the place of honor at God's right hand in the heavenly realms. Now he is far above any ruler or authority or power or leader or anything else, not only in this world, but also in the world to come. 1 John 4:4 also talks about this. He who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. He says that when the scriptures come to us to tell us about our enemy, they don't come to us to tell us about our enemy so that we'll be afraid. They come to us to tell us about our enemy so that we'll be aware. Not so that we'll be afraid, but so that we will be aware. He says, you need to be aware of this. And he says, the way that you should think about it is this. Think about a lion. So think about it in terms of a lion. And as I was preparing for this series and spending time in Ephesians 6 and thinking about what Peter says, I just happened to be one night sitting down with my boys. And we decided we were going to watch a show, and we were trying to figure out what show we were going to watch. We decided we were going to watch a documentary on lions. Now, when I grew up, we used to watch nature shows all the time. And nature shows were on TV all the time. And you got to watch all these different things that are happening in all these different places in the world. Today, kids just watch this Peppa Pig. I wonder why our culture is where it is. But I did. I used to grow up, and we watched these documentaries. And so we sat down, and I was like, all right, boys, we're going to watch a documentary on lions. And my boys were excited. They're all roaring and all excited about what they're going to see. And these lions come on, and they're killing everything. And my wife's like, you sure this is good for our three-year-old? And I was like, yeah, he needs to know. Things kill, things die. It's necessary for him to understand on this journey. This is Father's Day. We get to talk like this. And I was watching that, and it was really interesting because my oldest, he's all about lions and the power of lions. He's like, Dad, lions are the king of the jungle. I said, that's just kind of a weird phrase because lions don't live in a jungle. But beyond that, it's interesting because you would think with as powerful as a lion is, that a lion could take down a wildebeest anytime it wants. And it struck me in particular at this time because him and I were arguing about just how powerful lions are. And so we were watching this documentary in light of that, and it struck me for the first time, lions can't just take down a wildebeest whenever they want. Do you know that? They can't just decide, hey, I feel like eating, I'm going to go take one down. As a matter of fact, lions have to be very careful in the way that they hunt because they can't go into a herd of wildebeest and take down a wildebeest. The wildebeest will take them down. They have to separate a wildebeest from the pack. And we're watching this documentary, and these lions are just sitting back. They're just sitting back, and they're waiting, and they're hungry, and they're ready, but they know we can't just go take down anyone we want. We got to wait for the stupid one. And so they just sit back. We got to wait for the dumb one that decides that the grass is greener over there. And you're watching the documentary, and you're thinking, don't do it. Don't do it. But you see the one. He's not paying attention. Or he decides he wants to go out for something a little bit greener. Starts to make his way away from the herd. Lion starts to stand up. And you know what's coming. All of us know what's coming. You're thinking to yourself, why are you so dumb? Didn't your mom teach you anything? Get back to the herd. Like, didn't you? You watch this happen over and over again. Don't you know what happens here? I brought a clip so you could see. You see this little wildebeest, he's out there, he decides, you know what, I'm going to get away from the herd, get away from the rest of those stinky, smelly wildebeest. I need some free space. I need some space to run and stretch my legs. Look at all this open space. I get to be out here by myself. No one's bothering me. It's amazing. And the lion's just like, yep, yep, keep going. Keep going, keep going. And you're watching and you're thinking, what are you doing? What are you doing? Go back. And the lion says, nope, dinner time. And that lion comes out and he knows, if I can get you alone, I cut it off there because my wife told me I couldn't show the rest of it. She said, so many people will email you. I won't be able to talk to you for a week. She said, you got to turn it off there. If you'd like to see the recipe, you can email me. I'll send it to you. I know some of you can't handle it because your parents didn't let you watch those shows like they should have. But it was really interesting to me. I'm watching it. And as I watched it play out, it hit me like never before. I was like, I see that happen every day. It was like watching my experience as a pastor play out on a screen. You see, lions always go for the loner. Lions always go for the loner. And the lion knows, you stay together, I can't take you down. But if I can get you to believe that you can make it alone, if I can lure you into a sense of comfort where you begin to stray away, then I know I got you right where I want you. Peter says, you got to think about it like a lion. And lions go after the loners. But the problem is, for many of us, we see ourselves as this guy. We see ourselves like this. And so we think, you can throw the whole world at me, and it doesn't matter. I can take them all on. And we think, us against the world, by myself, I can win. And God's stepping into your life and saying, no, you can't. No, you can't. And right now, there's this huge movement in our country. And I hear people talk about it from time to time. They'll say things like, you know, I love Jesus, but I don't love the church. Or, I love Jesus, but I don't really want to be part of the whole church thing. Jesus says that you can't do that. Jesus says that that doesn't work. It's not possible to say, I love Jesus, but I don't love the church. Because Jesus says, if you love me, you'll take care of my church. Jesus says, if you love me, you'll obey me. Jesus doesn't say you love me because you feel some way about me. Jesus says, you love me. If you love me, you'll obey me. That's how I know that you love me. He says, if you love me, you'll obey me. And he says, I want for you not to worry just about yourself, but I want for you to worry about my church. I want you to take care of my church. I want for you to serve my church. But we have this idea that we can make it alone. We have this idea that we can make it as a loner, and God's stepping into our lives and saying, listen, you are not going to win like that. And just for a second, I want to talk to those of you who are listening on live stream and Facebook, because you come into our services here, and we love that you're able to watch from all over the world. But don't for a second think that this is all that you need to follow Jesus. As a matter of fact, if all you have is live stream or Facebook, you aren't actually following Jesus. You have to be a part of a local body of believers, wherever it is, whether you're here locally or whether you're around the world. You have to be a part of a local body of believers in order to follow Jesus, because he says, if you love me, you'll love my church, you'll care about, you'll serve my church. You can't win alone. And the entire picture that he's painting for us here, is a group of people who are fighting together. And he's calling them to engage together. And as he talks to them about unity, he's not just talking about a nice club. He's not just saying, hey, listen, you guys need to come together like this nice country club or this book club or whatever. No. The picture that he's painting is not just a nice club where everybody gets along. That's not at all the picture that he's painting. The picture that he's painting is an army. He says, this is the way I want you to think about this. I want you to think about it like an army. And what he's calling them to is he's calling them to enlist in that army. He says, I want you to enlist in this army to fight for the people around you. In Ephesians chapter 2, he's talking to them about this. And he said, or Ephesians chapter 4, he says, however, he has given each one of us a special gift through the generosity of Christ. Jump down a couple verses later, he says, now these are the gifts Christ gave to the church, the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors and teachers. Their responsibility is to equip God's people to do his work and build up the church, the body of Christ. He says, I want for you, not just for you to get together and have a nice time talking to one another and getting to know one another. He says, no. This is about fighting for people. He says, I want for you to bring everything that God's given you to the table and to be able to say, okay, how can I use this as a part of this body to fight for people? You can't win alone. You can't win alone. And if you keep thinking that you're going to, if you keep thinking that you're going to win alone, your enemy, he's got you right where he wants you. And I've seen it time after time after time after time after time. And someone says, hey, look, I got a new job. I'm going to have to step out of dinner group. And I'm not available like I used to be. I'm not going to be able to serve. You can almost start a countdown clock. And you just watch them. They begin to stray away. And it's only a matter of time. He's got you right where he wants you. And Paul steps into the life of these Ephesians and he says, you've got to start winning. And that means you've got to start fighting together. You have to start fighting together. Not just that you're connecting with one, but you're fighting together. This is why inside of our dinner groups aren't just about having a book club. It's about people taking steps. It's about people fighting for one another. It's not just about what I can get from the people around me. It's about how I can build into the lives of the people around me where we can fight together. And this is why this is so important. This is so important because as we walk through this summer, we're going to talk about how Jesus teaches us to fight. And we're going to talk about how we fight many of those battles, those personal battles in our lives. And we're fighting against anger in our life. And we're fighting against bitterness in our life. And we're fighting against porn in our life. And we're fighting against all these different personal battles. Listen very carefully to me. Listen to me. Because some of you are like, I want to get to that part and talk about that. I don't really want to be part of fighting together as a family. This is the foundation that allows you to do that. It's how we fight collectively that allows us to be able to fight independently, that allows us to be able to fight and win in those independent battles. If you will not do this, do not be surprised when you can't win over here. If you're not willing to engage the battle collectively with the family, if you're not willing to engage it as part of the family, don't be surprised when you can't win individually. Because the way that God prepares us to fight those personal battles, that takes place as we fight collectively, and we gain strength here to be able to fight there. There's so much that happens in this process, but some of us, we don't want to do it God's way. We want to do it our way. And so we don't want to act in obedience and get involved in the body and serve. We want to just be able to win over here. Listen, you're not going to like to hear this, but you need to hear this. If you want to do it your way instead of God's way, don't be surprised if God begins to actively work against you in succeeding over here. I've experienced this in my life over and over and over again. When you come to God and God says, here's the way I want you to do it, and you say, no, God, it'll work out a little bit better over here. God in my life has shown me time and time again, he will actively work against me being successful over here. Why? Because he doesn't care about me? No, because he cares too much about me to allow me to succeed in something that's less than what I was created for. He cares too much about you for that. And some of you are trying to win those personal battles, but you're losing. And the reason that you're losing is because you're not acting in obedience in the way that he wants for you to win, in the way that he created you for you to win. And there's a reason why his way is the way it is. It's important. He didn't just throw it together. He says, you need to fight together. You need to enlist, bring all that you have to the table, figure out, okay, how do we fight together for the people around us? I don't think we understand this. I'll tell you why. I sit in my staff meetings and I listen to my leaders talk. And they're talking to me about how difficult it is to get people to show up on time to serve. Let me ask you something. Why is your leader having a hard time getting you to show up on time? We're fighting for people. This isn't just a small thing. We're fighting for people. Why aren't we bringing all of what we have to this? People, my leaders are talking to me. They'll say, we're having trouble recruiting people to be able to fight for people. Why are the leaders struggling to fight for people? We have over 1,000 people who are showing up on a consistent basis here at Hoboken Grace. Our leaders shouldn't be struggling to recruit. Our leaders should be turning people away. The problem that I should be hearing in the staff meeting isn't I can't get people to join the team. The problem I should be hearing is I don't have enough positions on the team and people keep annoying me because they want to serve. That's the problem that we should have. You see, when you understand this, when you understand what Ephesians 6 is teaching us, you come to it and say, listen, I understand. In order for me to win, I have to get involved in the body. I have to begin to serve as part of the body. And it's not just about being in a book club. I think some of you think that dinner group's a book club, and so when it's time for you to step up as a leader, you're like, no, I just want to take from it. I don't really want to give to it. As opposed to saying, no, I'm going to bring all of what God has given me to the table so that we can fight together. We buy into the idea we can do it alone. And I just want to talk for a second to those of you who are dads here today, because I'll be honest with you, dads, we're the worst at this. Dads, we are the worst at this. And a big part of that is that we've got unbelievable demands on our time. And between work and trying to be a husband and trying to be a father and everything that goes into that, the idea that we're going to be able to fight as part of our family, it's hard to wrap our minds around. But here's the thing, you need to do it. And wives, you need to make it a priority for them to do it. Why? Because in order for them to win personally, they need to be part of fighting collectively. And you need them to win in your family, and that means you need them to be part of fighting collectively. You need to make it a priority for that to happen. I don't care if you shave your head. You're not going to be Bruce Willis. It's not going to happen. We don't win like that. And I talk to people about joining teams. Sometimes people say, well, you know, the process is so hard. It's not hard. First of all, it's crazy easy. Secondly, do you really think one day we're going to get to heaven and God's going to be like, well, you know, I told you to use your gifts and talents as a part of the local body. You're going to look at him and say, well, it was really hard to sign up. You think at that point he's going to turn to me, Chris, why don't you make it easier for them to sign up? Do you think that's how it's going to work out? Nope. No. It's time to engage the battle. It's time to start winning. But that means that you're going to have to obey him. You walk out of here today, just find a leader that you're going to annoy until they get you involved. Annoy the snot out of them every week. Hey, listen, where are you going to get me involved? Hey, listen, where? Just show up early next week. Say, I'm here to greet. I don't know. If you need me somewhere else, I'll be somewhere else, but I'm just here to greet. Where am I needed? If we understood Ephesians 6, that's what we would do. It's time. It's time to stop losing. But in order for that to happen, we have to trust him and obey him about how we win. And we win when we fight together. Will you pray with me? Father, as we look at this and as we look at really the big picture that you're teaching us in Ephesians, of unity and how we bring our gifts to the table and the unique way that you've gifted us to be a part of this body, I pray for those who are here who think that they're insignificant in this, that they don't have anything to offer, that it doesn't matter whether or not they're fighting. Father, I pray that today they would begin to realize the truth that they matter to the mission. Father, I thank you for how you have allowed us to begin to win in our city. I thank you for the amazing victories that you're giving us all over our city. I thank you for the victories that are taking place in people's lives like Patricia's. Father, I thank you for all of the different ways that we see that you are allowing us to experience victory. And Father, I pray for those who are here that they would not settle for just observing it, but that they would decide that it's time to win. In obedience, that they would bring their gifts and their talents to the table and engage in this battle for people with us. Father, I pray that you would begin to build in us an anticipation and excitement of what's possible when we stand firm in the power of the Lord, not as individuals, but when we stand firm in your power together. Father, I pray that we would crush the enemy in this city. I pray that we would crush the enemy in this city because we stand firm together in your power. In Jesus' name.